Nuclear power? No thanks. Part 1. Fill in each blank space with one word. When you need to provide a speaker's name, use their first name only. Andy Holcomb, Stephen Murphy, Nicola Buckley, Carol Roberts. You'll hear the recording twice. Maximum 7 marks. 0.5 for each correct answer.
Today, there is considerable concern about global warming, not to mention the world's dependence on Middle Eastern oil. For these reasons, nuclear power, which was seen as the great evil a generation ago, is being re-evaluated. In July, the British government announced its intention to build more nuclear power stations. In order to get an idea of public opinion, I took to the streets of Cambridge and asked people the question, does Britain need more nuclear power? The first person to speak, Andy Holcomb, is a marketing director.
I think that's a difficult question to answer. I do feel frustrated that the government doesn't pay anything like the level of investment in non-nuclear sustainable energy sources than it does in nuclear. I'd far rather see investment in wind, tidal barrage, methane, biomass type energy than I would in sustaining something that's just increasing the risk. If we do have to invest in nuclear, then I'd like to see more investment in things like fusion, which is an inherently safe form of nuclear energy.
Stephen Murphy is a musician.
No, because it's dirty and it's dangerous. It's difficult to dispose of the waste, and it involves no investment in other renewable energy sources, like wind, and it doesn't encourage people to look after their own energy requirements and get insulation and things like that in their houses.
Nicola Buckley is a festival organiser. She is a supporter of renewable technology. So what are her misgivings about nuclear power?
Maybe a threat from terrorism, attacks on nuclear power stations, and just the long time for the waste to, you know, is still dangerous and has to be disposed of.
Last but not least, Carol Roberts is a reception manager.
Now, I'm sure there must be some other way of helping us to get more power than nuclear. I don't agree with nuclear power. We've got sea out there, we've got the windmills. America's doing, what is it, in the desert we must, I mean, all the sunshine we're getting now. There must be another way than nuclear power. Look at Chernobyl. You don't know if that can happen. It's like one of those things, it's something waiting to happen. And I'd rather not go down that road. I'd rather go, you know, more natural. With all the technology we've got, surely we can do better than nuclear.
Today, there is considerable concern about global warming, not to mention the world's dependence on Middle Eastern oil. For these reasons, nuclear power, which was seen as the great evil a generation ago, is being re-evaluated. In July, the British government announced its intention to build more nuclear power stations. In order to get an idea of public opinion, I took to the streets of Cambridge and asked people the question, does Britain need more nuclear power? The first person to speak, Andy Holcomb, is a marketing director.
I think that's a difficult question to answer. I do feel frustrated that the government doesn't pay anything like the level of investment in non-nuclear sustainable energy sources than it does in nuclear. I'd far rather see investment in wind, tidal barrage, methane, biomass type energy than I would in sustaining something that's just increasing the risk. If we do have to invest in nuclear, then I'd like to see more investment in things like fusion, which is an inherently safe form of nuclear energy.
Stephen Murphy is a musician.
No, because it's dirty and it's dangerous. It's difficult to dispose of the waste, and it involves no investment in other renewable energy sources, like wind, and it doesn't encourage people to look after their own energy requirements and get insulation and things like that in their houses.
Nicola Buckley is a festival organiser. She is a supporter of renewable technology. So what are her misgivings about nuclear power?
Maybe a threat from terrorism, attacks on nuclear power stations, and just the long not the time for the waste to, you know, it's still dangerous and has to be disposed of.
Last but not least, Carol Roberts is a reception manager.
Now, I'm sure there must be some other way of helping us to get more power than nuclear. I don't agree with nuclear power. We've got a sea out there, we've got the windmills. America's doing, what is it, in the desert we must, I mean, all the sunshine we're getting now. There must be another way than nuclear power. Look at Chernobyl. You don't know if that can happen. It's like one of those things, it's something waiting to happen. And I'd rather not go down that road. I'd rather go, you know, more natural. With all the technology we've got, surely we can do better than nuclear.
Elite sport for children. Choose the best option, A, B, or C. You'll hear the recording twice. Maximum 10 marks, one for each correct answer.
The familiar sound of boys having a kickabout. But these Ukrainian boys are a bit different. They're training at the top-class facilities of Dynamo Kiev's elite football academy. The director of the academy, Anatoly Shapin, told me that there are 550 pupils at his school and that about 70 of them live there full-time. He tells me his school is exclusive and says it's the best in the Ukraine. In Cobham, in Surrey, Jerry Harvey is the education and welfare officer for Chelsea's football academy. He's also proud of his multi-million pound state-of-the-art facility.
This is our new academy building, and we want as many children as possible to cross the road one day and go from here over to there.
Jerry's ambition is to produce footballers who are good enough to win a place in Chelsea's Premiership team, but that is a mighty challenge. All the boys want to be the best, but in a global market where the number of jobs is limited, they face stiff competition. In the last programme, I looked at the physical challenges faced by children who want to embark on an elite career in either sport or the performing arts. We discovered that the training of a young child must be both systematic and careful if the possibility of long-term physical damage is to be avoided. In this programme, I'm going to explore the psychological challenges children face when they choose the career of an elite athlete or performer. I'll be looking at the impact of elite training on emotional development in such a demanding and competitive market, the complex and the difficult choices young people have to make as they approach adolescence, the constant pressure of high-level training, and the learning to live with both success and failure. The Premier League's youth development manager, Hugh Jennings, says that a great deal is invested by them in the training of an elite football student. He says it's vital to understand the student's emotional and psychological needs.
I think it's massively underestimated how much dedication is required from the individual athlete and indeed from their family to ensure the opportunity for success. And what you're seeing as far as the player's progress is concerned is the need for the club to ensure that they're not into swift judgments, that they see the development of a player as being a long-term process tailor-made to that individual's profile. The psychological profiling has been a taboo in football for many years, but slowly but surely we're seeing now the advent of people appreciating the importance of providing support for mental skills training and indeed for ensuring that, you know, the player's emotional needs are taken care of.
In order to understand the emotional needs of a child, we need first to look at the early relationship of a child with its parents. Julia Buckroyd is a psychologist and emeritus professor of counselling at the University of Hertfordshire. She began by explaining what the very young child needs from its parents.
The idea is that the child is not safe in the world for quite some considerable time and is liable to be frightened or upset or distressed by all kinds of experiences. And in that situation depends on usually the parents to create a facilitating environment in which the child can feel safe enough to explore. Because an unsafe child has to cling to its mother and therefore can't explore and can't learn. The sort of typical picture is of the child who's frightened to go to nursery school. So the role of the primary caregiver, the mother usually, is to create that safe environment within which exploration and development can take place. And over time, the child needs that less. So by the time a child is 10 or 11, the expectation within most state schools is the child is safe enough to go on a school journey of 4 nights away from home. So there's a process of gradual increasing confidence and self-confidence that will allow the child to be more autonomous, more separate, more independent.
For any child, the gradual process of acquiring confidence and emotional maturity takes time. But a child training to be an elite athlete may have to grow up even faster if they're to cope with the physical challenges, the long hours of training, and the requirements of demanding trainers. And all of this takes place away from the safe and cosy protection of loving parents. The familiar sound of boys having a kickabout. But these Ukrainian boys are a bit different. They're training at the top-class facilities of Dynamo Kiev's elite football academy. The director of the academy, Anatoly Shapin, told me that there are 550 pupils at his school and that about 70 of them live there full-time. He tells me his school is exclusive and says it's the best in the Ukraine. In Cobham, in Surrey, Jerry Harvey is the education and welfare officer for Chelsea's football academy. He's also proud of his multi-million pound state-of-the-art facility.
This is their new academy building, and we want as many children as possible to cross the road one day and go from here over to there.
Jerry's ambition is to produce footballers who are good enough to win a place in Chelsea's Premiership team, but that is a mighty challenge. All the boys want to be the best, but in a global market where the number of jobs is limited, they face stiff competition. In the last programme, I looked at the physical challenges faced by children who want to embark on an elite career in either sport or the performing arts. We discovered that the training of a young child must be both systematic and careful if the possibility of long-term physical damage is to be avoided. In this programme, I'm going to explore the psychological challenges children face when they choose the career of an elite athlete or performer. I'll be looking at the impact of elite training on emotional development in such a demanding and competitive market, the complex and the difficult choices young people have to make as they approach adolescence, the constant pressure of high-level training, and the learning to live with both success and failure. The Premier League's youth development manager, Hugh Jennings, says that a great deal is invested by them in the training of an elite football student. He says it's vital to understand the student's emotional and psychological needs.
I think it's massively underestimated how much dedication is required from the individual athlete and indeed from their family to ensure the opportunity for success. And what you're seeing as far as the player's progress is concerned is the need for the club to ensure that they're not into swift judgments, that they see the development of a player as being a long-term process tailor-made to that individual's profile. The psychological profiling has been a taboo in football for many years, but slowly but surely we're seeing now the advent of people appreciating the importance of providing support for mental skills training and indeed for ensuring that, you know, the player's emotional needs are taken care of.
In order to understand the emotional needs of a child, we need first to look at the early relationship of a child with its parents. Julia Buckroyd is a psychologist and emeritus professor of counselling at the University of Hertfordshire. She began by explaining what the very young child needs from its parents.
The idea is that the child is not safe in the world for quite some considerable time and is liable to be frightened or upset or distressed by all kinds of experiences. And in that situation depends on usually the parents to create a facilitating environment in which the child can feel safe enough to explore. Because an unsafe child has to cling to its mother and therefore can't explore and can't learn. The sort of typical picture is of the child who's frightened to go to nursery school. So the role of the primary caregiver, the mother usually, is to create that safe environment within which exploration and development can take place. And over time, the child needs that less. So by the time a child is 10 or 11, the expectation within most state schools is the child is safe enough to go on a school journey of 4 nights away from home. So there's a process of gradual increasing confidence and self-confidence that will allow the child to be more autonomous, more separate, more independent.
For any child, the gradual process of acquiring confidence and emotional maturity takes time. But a child training to be an elite athlete may have to grow up even faster if they're to cope with the physical challenges, the long hours of training, and the requirements of demanding trainers. And all of this takes place away from the safe and cozy protection of loving parents.